Hello and welcome to Film Kid Asks, the podcast where I ask questions to working professionals in the film industry from the perspective of someone just getting started. My name is Jordan, and today I'm joined by Alan King, a stunt performer, choreographer, trainer, and coordinator whose credits include Pacific Rim, The Man in the High Castle, and Suicide Squad, just to name a few of his impressive credits. Thank you so much for coming on the show, Alan.
Happy to be here.
So we're going to start off easy, maybe, and basic. And I am curious, what drew you to the film industry originally?
Well, I think like every kind of stunt guy, Asian martial art kid, you know, we were influenced by the greats. You know, you have Bruce Lee, Jackie Chan, Jet Li. And I think through their movies, that was kind of the first, my first introduction to martial arts as a whole. I mean, I studied martial arts when I was really young. And I actually remember hating it. The instructor was mean. I remember he would hit you. He would hit me and I'd cry and like, I'm never doing this again. And it wasn't until years later when I kind of rediscovered their movies that I went to my mom like, I want to learn this stuff. And the rest is history.
Yeah. So what drew you to film specifically? Was it, you know, trying to live up to those icons? What, instead of like going the competition martial arts route, what drew you to the actual like stunt side of film?
So for me, training martial arts, and from that led to acrobatics and teaching it, I've always felt a draw to perform. Even in martial arts school and martial arts class, you know, we'd have demos where we'd go outside in public. I remember in my Chinese school, we had kind of like a Chinese New Year showcase where I kind of put together a show, talent shows at school. And it wasn't actually until my last year of high school where I actually started drama. So that was kind of the acting side of it. I've been doing the martial arts stuff a while. But the acting side of it kind of really opened my eyes to a different way of performing. And so for me, my interest to film was kind of opened up more by drama. Like I always was attracted to the action and the martial arts of it, but drama kind of allowed me to open up a completely different side of myself. You know, in martial arts, you're kind of taught to be very focused, very disciplined, and essentially to kind of keep your emotions in check, whereas theater and drama allowed the opposite. And I thought that was like a whole new world to me. And so from that moment on, I've always enjoyed performing.
That's awesome. So speaking of training, what is the difference between fight training and stunt training?
Simple. Fights, hands, feet, punch, hit, bam, go down. Stunts is anything and everything that has any element of danger to it. So in a script, like if it calls for an actor, maybe something as simple to let me maybe trip and fall, to jumping out of an airplane, jumping off a building, crashing a car into a wall. That's stunts, so fire burns, even horseback riding. I'd say fights and fight scenes are kind of maybe like just a fraction of what's under the umbrella of stunts.
That makes a lot of sense. So at what point, I guess I'm curious, especially obviously this will be different for when you're performing versus when you're coordinating or doing the choreography, but at what point are you usually brought onto a project?
So that's if you're either a stunt coordinator or just a lowly stunt performer, stunt coordinators are generally brought on in the pre-production phase, depending on the producers and directors, how much knowledge they have of stunts and the stunt industry in general. They'll generally consult a stunt coordinator about, they'll have them read the script, and then the stunt coordinator will have to do a risk assessment evaluation of what are the stunt elements involved. And then that has to go through the union. I don't know if you guys have to deal with them at all, but the union does have a lot of requirements that keeps everything in check. So stunt coordinators are brought on pretty early. And then from then on, you know, you start going to location scouts, planning action sequences, working with all the various heads of different departments, planning on whatever gags or stunts require. As a stunt performer, sometimes you just get a call a few days before, like, hey, available tomorrow or in next week, this date. Yeah, we have a simple gag, a fight scene, blah, 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 for you, or you're going to stunt double this person. So stunt performers are just, you know, kind of almost last minute.
Yeah, that makes sense. So on a production that is kind of stunt heavy, how long should a production budget for rehearsals and training, especially if the actors want to do some of those stunts?
How much money do you have? That's really what it comes down to. Yeah. in general, feature movies, obviously I have a lot more money than TV. So I've worked on TV shows where it's like, okay, just choreograph it on the day and, you know, hopefully everything goes to plan. And usually, you know, the action's, you know, not as good as it could be. Then I've been on feature movies where they've spent like 3-4 months training the actors on like a 2-minute fight scene. And, you know, they're amazing at the fight by the end of that 4 months. But I mean, that was a little overkill. So, I mean, it really just varies. Obviously, the more time, the better. As a stunt coordinator and a teacher, I've experienced students and actors of varying abilities, right? So we always assume that, okay, they know absolutely nothing. So what would it take to train this actor to reach this level of performance and how much time and for them to perform it safely? And then when or if do we need stunt doubles to double them for certain sequences of the action?
Yeah. So what does that look like as a stunt coordinator when you're kind of breaking down the script? What are you looking for and how do you make those decisions?
So I always err on the side of caution. I mean, I just had to do a breakdown for a small independent. And just small things like the script said, the actor is angry and he bangs his hand on the fridge, right? And it could just be like something like, bam, like, you know, that. But then you think about it, okay, oh, that just hurt my hand. Oh, okay. So do we have to put rubber on the fridge maybe? Do we limit the number of takes? Do we cut it in such a way that, you know, we just maybe do the initial thud and just save the impact for one main take? So small things like that, right down to the big action car crashes and building jump stuff too.
Right. So I guess kind of going off of that, who is designing really the stunt? Like how collaborative is it between the performer, the stunt coordinator, and then the director?
Well, the script obviously will have a certain amount of action planned. And then depending on how close the relationship the stunt coordinator has with producer, director, writers, it is a highly collaborative process in the sense that maybe the coordinator will have an idea that the writer, director, producer didn't even think of. Then it can go the other way where the director's like, oh, well, how about we set them on fire, have them continually spinning and then land in the moving propeller. I'm like, yeah, that's probably not going to happen. So the coordinator has to have like some element of, you know, what's possible, how much time frame we have, the budget given, and, you know, a feel of course, the actors and whether we can get a stunt double for the actor too.
Right. So you mentioned the script, and I am curious, as a stunt coordinator or choreographer, do you prefer the script to have lots of detail in the way that they describe an action sequence, or do you prefer it to be more vague and up to the interpretation of the director and the coordinator?
First and foremost, and a lot of kind of new stunt performers don't understand this, a lot of new stunt performers, coordinators will come and be like, oh, we're going to make this awesome action. Tons of flips, cool tricks. It's going to be sick. And then on the day it gets cut down to, oh, it's a punch, boom, down. And they're like, what happened? And well, basically story first, obviously, right? If you only have a certain amount of numbers in the day, you have to get the story points across. And then of course the action is always left till the end. And sometimes we only have time just to film, block, punch, boom. Okay, that was the main story point, that this character triumphs over this character. On, of course, bigger budget films where we have the luxury to workshop, experiment, that's where you actually really get the cutting edge of action, because you do have, you know, stunt people, you know, who are at the top of the game and they're like thinking, okay, well, the script says this, maybe we can invent this new move or new rig or new way of shooting it to push the boundaries of what's already been seen out there. So in the ideal world, it is a collaboration. I mean, you could ask the same thing, you can ask the exact same question to the head costume designer, right? Like, you know, the writer might say, oh, he wears flashy clothing, but what does that mean, right? So it's really, you know, you leave it to the experts to decide and listen, take on their input, but ultimately it is the end decision of the producer, director of what will stay in the movie.
Yeah, for sure. And I'm sure no matter what, there is some degree of like up to interpretation with, you know, the description of the action. So that totally makes sense. So I guess kind of going off of that, how do you make sure that the sequences you're designing are both visually interesting and engaging to the audience and exciting while also remaining in support of the larger story, especially on shows that are more stunt focused and do maybe have a bit of a bigger budget? How do you kind of balance those things?
Well, at the end of the day, because of union rules, I mean, we're just responsible for choreographing the action to a small degree, filming it. But at the end of the day, all of that action, raw footage goes to the editors. And sometimes the editors will collaborate with the directors and make the final cut. And, you know, I've seen final cuts that have completely butchered the action. And I've seen final cuts that have been pretty like fantastic and pretty amazing just because they've allowed the coordinators to have a say. But for the most part, what we normally do is what's known as a previs or previsualization. Depending on the budget, again, you have a stunt team that's on call full time and a stunt space. You get the breakdown of the script. Okay. So we start putting concepts together. We choreograph it. We'll shoot it and we'll edit it in the way that we think best. One, showcases the action, and two, tells the story. And we'll present that to the director as a suggestion. So for the most part, that is the end of it, you know, and then on the day they'll shoot it and what happens happens on the cutting room floor.
Yeah, for sure. And that's interesting, the previs side of things, because that's not something that I had really thought of. But again, makes sense, because I'm sure you're collaborating with a bunch of different teams, so that communication definitely needs to be.
It's kind of like the equivalent of like in wardrobe or even the art department, you know, they'll have mock-ups or drawings. So in the old school days for action sequences or fight scenes, you know, we would just kind of like maybe even toss on a cell phone and just like have one kind of angle just to show the director, oh, this is the fight, and then it's up to them to record it. But more recently, you know, we actually do kind of professional shots, angles, you know, we'll pan, we'll show, we'll have story points. And the new generation of kind of coordinators all have kind of that camera sense and editing ability.
Right. That's interesting as well. Because yeah, I'm sure it plays better to different angles, and you kind of have to design that into
100%. A fight scene can be, you can make or break a fight scene by how it's filmed. Definitely. Like one, you can have amazing choreography, but if it's not filmed correctly, the action sequence isn't, you know, told and filmed in an exciting way, then the audience, you know, one, will be lost, or two, just won't get it. I remember when one of the first the Bourne Identities came out, this is when kind of like the handheld kind of shaky action camera was happening, and I was like, what? You can't even see what's going on. I mean, you may get a flash of an arm lock or a head smash or a break, but then all the choreography is just shaky camera and you really can't tell what's happening. So I wasn't a fan of that style at all when it came out.
Yeah, no, it's like basically the opposite of films like John Wick, where you can see every single thing that happens. I think that, yeah, Bourne Identity seems to be much more interested in the energy of it rather than like how actually literate the different movements right. are. So I guess that's kind of a good segue into my next kind of section, because I am very curious as to how the stunts team works with the different departments. And I guess the first thing that I'm going to start out with is camera, because you did touch on that. How collaborative is the stunt team with the camera department, and you know, do they usually work with you when you're designing the shots off the bat? Is that something that you're like kind of thinking about, and when you are kind of doing the previs, the style that they usually shoot in? Yeah, how does that kind of work?
So honestly, every production is different, and every person is different. And I would say the end answer to that question is ego. The director's ego, the DOP's ego, camera defense ego, like they're like, oh, these stunt guys don't know what they're doing, whatever, okay, you know, we're just gonna do whatever we want. So like it really depends on the relationship you have, you know, like on episodics, you know, you do have new directors potentially coming in every episode, so you're working with a new person each time. Your DOP might think they know best and don't even listen to how we want to shoot it. That being said, given like we've all been on a location scout, like the stunt coordinators and the heads of the departments, to see what the location's like. So they at the very base of it, when we shoot our previs, like we'll at least know, okay, they want to shoot it from this angle, not that angle. So, like that'll always be kind of the back. So we're not going to cross this axis here. So okay, so when we do our previs, we'll keep that in mind. That's kind of, you know, how the general look of it will be.
Yeah, that, again, that makes sense. And I'm interested specifically also in the camera operator, because when you're doing these stunts, obviously you need to make sure that the camera operator is safe as well, and, you know, is following the action properly. So how is that just done in blocking? Is that something that they're involved with in, you know, while you're doing the previs?
So for the higher budget, like I'm talking feature films here, where they have crazy camera angles, you'll have either like cameras on these like crazy rigs that can just fly and just follow like cars dropping down. Also, you have I think they actually get stunt guys to do it. Like in my experience, like the stunt guys are the ones who actually hold the camera and do some of the action, where the stunt guys are on. So you have the main, say it's fall, you have the main stunt guy or actor falling down, and then you have the camera behind also falling down. So they're both on wire. So if I'm the camera guy, I'll be on a wire holding the camera and I'll go with the guy jumping down. I had another colleague, he's like, there was this big fight scene. I think it was through a train, and you know, the, and because he had choreographed, he knows all the action, and it's going through, and had fight, guy falls. He's like, just give me the camera. he just did the action himself. So yeah, depending on how the action is, depending how it's choreographed, and again, the relationships the stunt people have with the camera department. You know, sometimes the stunt people will just come and take, you know, those more dynamic shots on their own.
That's so interesting. I also hadn't thought of that, but that again makes sense. Especially because they would be more familiar with the action. So obviously, you know, this will change from project to project, but how does the director usually work with the stunt team? Is that something where, you know, it's just like a conversation beforehand to kind of give the vibe of the action? Like, how hands-on usually is the director when helping to choreograph maybe an action sequence or a stunt?
Well, when you say like it's you know, this film by so-and-so, right? At the end of the day, like, the film is the director's artistic vision, right? And again, it's our job just to serve that bigger vision, whether you're an actor, you know, or stunt coordinator, right? So really, our job starts in that pre-production meeting. We kind of outline maybe all the danger elements, and then really we kind of choreograph and design that action to the best of our ability and present it to the director. And the director will have notes and say, okay, maybe make this cut longer. How about we do a different move here? I didn't like that. I like this. So, you know, we'll keep in mind the notes that they like and they don't like and make the adjustments accordingly.
Yeah, that makes sense. So as far as performance, would that be something that the director would give performance notes on and then the coordinator would maybe give action notes on? How does that relationship work?
What do you mean by performance?
I guess say it was like an old guy and the action was looking too clean or whatever, would that be something that the stunt, I guess I don't know who is giving direction to the performer. Is that something that the coordinator?
Well, generally on the day, you know, you'll have the coordinator and the director obviously on monitors watching how the take went. So if coordinator notices like, oh, maybe that was a miss, and say, okay, hold your arm up higher, bring it across longer to really cross camera to make it look like that hit connected. The director might have a note like, oh, maybe you're a little angrier doing it, or you know, maybe you're a little softer doing it, something like that. But it's collaborative on the day. It's just people just yell whatever notes they feel pertain to that give and take.
Again, it makes sense. This is all making a lot of sense. So I guess another important relationship I would imagine would be with the special effects team. What does that usually look like, especially for sequences that do have special effects, where obviously that's like a safety concern and things that need to be planned out in advance?
So you have special effects, and then you also have the CG department, computer generated action. So definitely, we're always highly collaborative. Any special effects person hired on a set is assumed to have a certain level of competence that they're good. That being said, accidents have happened, and I've been there where accidents have happened. But for the most part, you know, the FX guys, you know, we say, okay, the firebombs are going to go off here. You know, wait for the actor to run past, or the stunt person walk past before they go off. Squibs, you know, the fake bullet things. You know, watch the action, and you know, you'll hit the bomb, you know, when they shoot and try to coordinate that sort of thing. So yeah, obviously those things can't be rehearsed really just because of budget. You know, sometimes if you do have the budget, obviously you can practice that in advance, but a lot of times it's kind of just on the day. You'll have the stunt performer, you'll explain to the stunt performer, or the SFX person will explain to the stunt performer, okay, you know, you might feel like a little bang, a little charge here, might be a little hot on that flash. This is how the fire burn is gonna go. The car works in this way if it's a kind of driving scene. So yeah, it is highly collaborative, but a lot of the stuff kind of does happen on the day. The coordinator will have a conversation with the SFX team department ahead of time. But yeah, for the performer aspect, you know, a lot of times it is just kind of on day, depending on the budget of the film.
Right. That's interesting. Wow, that I could see that being intense. Is that something that in advance you would know, though, as a stunt performer, like what kind of stunts you would be doing on that day?
Yes and no. A lot of times the coordinator just calls you, hey, you available? And of course, you know, if you're not working, I'm like, yeah, I'm available. And you don't really find out until the day or even the day before. And, you know, you're expected to have a certain skill set that you bring. And so you're able right. to kind of perform the action. But yeah, for the most part, and then sometimes you'll get rehearsal days and you'll practice this and you'll say, bam, 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 there's the fight here. And then you'll run, boom, action goes off. Then obviously you won't have the explosion in rehearsal, but you know, you have an idea of, okay, it'll happen somewhere there. Okay. So I'm going to jump and react this way, or the wires are going to pull us this way. When this explosion goes off.
Wow. That's crazy. You guys are brave. I will give you that. So, speaking of collaborative relationships, what does the relationship look like with the actors and it kind of making sure that there's a consistency in the performance between the actor and then the stunt performer?
Actors are the face of the show. We need to take care of them. Obviously, we want them to look good. So we will rehearse them and train them to the best of our ability, make sure they feel 100% comfortable with the fight or the stunt that they'll be performing. Or we'll say that, oh, that's too dangerous for you to do. Because sometimes actors, obviously, they don't have a sense of what's dangerous or not. I'm like, oh, yeah, I could do that. But maybe you don't fall off the horse on this particular sequence. So that's when the coordinator will say, okay, we'll get a double in to do that. For the most part, I mean, the stunts are kind of fast. And it's not like, you know, most people have some crazy unique way of moving or falling. When a fall is a fall, generally humans kind of will all kind of react and fall the same way. The only one funny story that I have is years ago, there was, I don't know if you guys are, I'm dating myself here, but there's Steven Seagal, who was an old kind of old school martial arts guy. And there was a stuntman who was asked to be his double. And he had a lot of running sequences. So the stunt guy was like, okay, I'm going to be diligent. I'm going to watch every Steven Seagal movie and see how he runs. And he's actually got a funny run. His arms kind of go side to side. So he actually did his best to kind of mimic that run. And then so he showed Steven Seagal like on the day, and Steven was, what the hell is this? I don't run like that. What's he doing? And he wanted to fire him on like right away. And then they just he like changed it after to satisfy him. But he himself wasn't aware of how he ran.
That's
which is actually pretty funny.
Wow, yeah. Huh? Poor guy. did all the research, all the work.
I know. My first experience in stunts was with the Jackie Chan stunt team. And Jackie Chan actually has like a stunt double he doesn't really do like the big stunts, but he's just there in case like, you know, Jackie gets hurt or maybe it's a long shot and something simple. And so he actually got hurt one day and he's like, you go double him. I'm like, what? I'm going to double Jackie? So I got in his wardrobe and it was just like chasing a guy down an alleyway. It was a long, wide shot. And so like I did the first take, you know, I was running after him. And then the stunt double comes like, oh, no, Jackie kind of runs a little more like this. I'm like, and then I realized, oh, it's not just me running as fast as I can. I got to run like how Jackie Chan would run. So that was kind of like, I was like 19. I was new to the whole. I was like, oh, I never even thought about that. I'm like, so, yeah, you want to try to pick up your actor's mannerisms as best you can, obviously as a stunt performer, as a stunt double too, if you're doubling.
Right. Yeah. And so I imagine, especially in training, that's something that you would probably practice as long as you're not like just a day player. If you're doubling, I could see that, you know, being a part of the performance. So I guess specifically as a choreographer, but you could answer this in, you know, as a performer as well. What would you say is like the most creative part of your job?
Most creative part of my job? You know, obviously you have what's written in the script. And so it's point A and it should finish in point B. But what happens in between point A and point B, really, that's up to us. And on more collaborative scripts even, coordinators will actually say, this story doesn't make sense. And I should talk directly to the producers and writers because there's a meeting on how the fight goes. And say, and sometimes I've seen the writers will actually just augment the story points, just say, okay, this will suit the action better and tell the story better by changing it in that regard. So I say the most creative points is when you actually have input and you get kind of the story points changed to suit, the action that you want to develop, and it will serve the overall story as well.
Yeah, that's awesome. And then kind of on the flip side, what would you say is the hardest part of your job, specifically when you're choreographing or coordinating?
One of the things, and this is a writing analogy from a writing book I once read, and it's like the hardest part is killing your babies, which means, you've written the script and now it's time to cut it down from 120 pages down to 90 pages. And, I love this scene, but is it necessary? So it's kind of the same with the choreography. You have your choreography made. Oh, this move looks sick. Oh, I love this. It's gonna be so awesome. Cut. So I think it hurts the most when you actually see the end result of it, and the complete butchered, the fight that you had created, that in your mind was amazing, and then the end product was like
that would be devastating, especially because when you're on set, you don't really have that creative control, but I'm sure you have designed everything meticulously to tell the story, so I could see that being very frustrating. I guess also, what is the hardest part when you're performing?
The hardest part when you're performing, hopefully you always have decent rehearsals, but there is always with stunts an unknown factor, right? It's not like architecture. Architect is a specific set of rules, and obviously materials of certain weights and calibers that you have a steel frame, you'll build on the facade to this, and it's all kind of methodical. With film and TV, with wire gags, right? You might have done 1,000 wire gags, but because every scenario is different, the distance is different, the weight of the performer is different, how they want to shoot it is different. So there is always kind of this first time element to every stunt, even though you might have done a million kind of ratchets with wires. So as a performer, you never know what will go wrong on the day, right? Hopefully, the SFX guys are going to hit the explosion at the exact right time. Hopefully the wire guys are going to hit it exact same time. But you never know. It is that element of danger that's probably the scariest thing, especially on lower budget shows where they don't allot as much time for rehearsals. At the end of the day, though, you are making a movie. It is all make-believe. It is all pretend. It's not worth someone losing a leg over or losing their life over if you have to cut out a gag and make it not as good, but it's safer. That definitely I would err on that side as a coordinator. You do have veteran, newbie performers or even new coordinators that sometimes have a hard job saying no to the coordinator or no to the director if they want something, right? And that's when accidents happen. I've heard stories too about when everything's rehearsed great, okay, performer's comfortable, it was a car hit or something, and then director's like, can he just move a little bit this way, it'll be better for camera, so he gets hit by the edge of the car instead of the top of the car or something like that, and little do you know that changes the trajectory of his fall, of everything, and that could completely change how the performer feels and change the safety of the entire stunt. So yeah, there's definitely a give and take there. And the scariest thing for a performer is kind of last minute changes that haven't been practiced.
So is that something that you would be able to talk to the coordinator about and, trying to get that extra rehearsal time? And is that something as a performer that you can
do? Honestly, realistically, you just do it. Sometimes as a performer, maybe you're not that experienced. You don't even know, right? Until you do it and you almost get killed or you do get injured. you know? So, and that's kind of like the danger element of stunts, right? That, you know, you can get seriously hurt, right?
Right. So what do you wish more people knew about stunts?
You're talking about like the general public, or you're talking like people in like directors, producers, people who work in the industry too, or?
I guess let's do both. So I guess we'll start with film industry people on production. What do you wish production knew about stunts?
Well, the biggest thing really I find is kind of when it comes to wardrobe. I've had some really kind of limiting clothing on, and sometimes that's just the name of the game, right? But if you're doing like a big fight scene, you have to do high kicks and stuff. It doesn't help if your pants are so tight you can barely feel your genital bits, you know? Like, you need that freedom of movement. So like more collaboration in terms of when people design kind of props, costumes, you know, just to help the stunt performers in their job when it comes to time on set. In terms of the general public, you know what? I think the general public is fine. I mean, if the thing looks good on TV and they believe that this person's hand is being chopped off, this person really was burned on fire, then we've done our job. Our job is to tell the story and make the audience and people believe in this fantasy world that we've created, right? That we've all created. And as long as, you know, that has been fulfilled, then our job is done. When the general public says, oh, that's a stunt double, oh, that looks so fake, you know, then in a sense, you know, we failed, right? And even for me, who's been in this industry, you know, I'll see, oh, continuity there, this cut didn't quite sync up with this cut. But the shows and films that really get me is when I forget about all that stuff. And I'm like, oh, this is a really good story. Wow, yeah, and I'm fully engaged, right? And those are the ones that really, I think, are the best and most exciting to watch.
Yeah, of course. Honestly, the wardrobe thing is something that I never even thought of. So that's actually a really good little tidbit and something that I'll definitely keep in mind in the future. And then I guess I'm going to ask one more question before I open it up to a few of my friends. And that is, what advice would you give to someone who is interested in joining the stunt department?
There's no kind of set school, right? Everyone gets into stunts in their own way. For me, though, personally, I think the best foundation to have is martial arts and gymnastics background. With both those two types of training, you're fully aware of your body, you have great aerial awareness, you have spent hours cultivating a skill set, and you know what it's like to kind of start with nothing and develop something at the very base of maybe like, let's say, a backflip. You know, a person who's never seen a backflip, like it just seems like almost an impossibility to them. But once you've kind of mastered that, you know, you're like, okay, you know, I'm able to do this with my body. You have a certain amount of competence that you can extend that skill set to other more dynamic things. From then on, you know, obviously income is a factor, but you can start getting into stunt driving. You can start getting into horseback riding. You can start getting into skydiving. There's so many different factors. Like sometimes stunt people will get in, you know, it's a big horse show. So like, oh, let's hire these expert riders. So they come in, you know, and obviously they make good money and like, oh yeah, I'm a stuntman now. But then when they're asked to do something else, they don't have that skill set, you know, to do fights, so, you know, to sell a reaction. So I think on the whole, you know, having just a solid martial arts and gymnastics foundation is probably the best thing a performer can have when just trying to enter into the world.
Yeah, I guess I'm going to ask a really quick follow-up to that, just based on what you said. Do you think it's better at the beginning to kind of specialize in one thing and then kind of slowly build your repertoire of what you're able to do? Or is it better to just have like a more general knowledge?
In terms of
if you want to, you know, getting quite good at horseback riding, for example, or driving, and then building those other kind of skills, or would you say it's better to just like have a foundational level of skill in like most things?
Again, there's no real, you know, yes or no answer like, oh, this is the way to do it, because it's really dependent on what the production needs. I had a coordinator once call me saying, oh, I need, you know, an African-American female of this weight and this height to double this actress. And of course, you know, that was very rare. And you know, sometimes they'd have to just maybe just pick anybody out with even the most minimal amount of training. And right. I know a lot of people that have gotten that way, like they need to find a stunt double with this look and this height, or a girl to double this girl, but they've got zero to no training. So in that instance, I mean, they have no choice but to kind of train them as they go on set. And hopefully that person has the sense to seek instructors and train themselves, because getting hired as a double on a job is an amazing opportunity, and you should treat it as such. It's like being cast for a lead role in a movie. Like, it's, you're going to have job security for the next 6 to 8 months. You're going to have a great paycheck consistently, but you should definitely invest a ton of money into your training so that, you know, you are worthy of that position. That being said, I obviously do also teach this stuff, and I've a lot of my students have been missing the training that I've given because of this pandemic. And if I can take a second just to plug my YouTube channel, which is called Training Madness. You can probably just Google it, Training Madness. And I've uploaded a couple of videos there, and I have a whole series planned that'll kind of take people from really just physical training, what they need to kind of strengthen their bodies just to get into it. I'm talking like super beginner level, and have kind of a foundational knowledge of what I expect if they ever work with me or work on set, just to know their body a little bit better.
Great. Yeah. I'll make sure to put your YouTube channel in the description of the podcast Appreciate episode it. As well. But now I'm going to open it up to a few of my friends.
For sure.
Hello. Hope you're doing well. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
I've taught you everything. She's a student of mine, by the way. What questions could you have? All right.
What questions could I possibly have? But I was wondering, because stunt is kind of course, like a dangerous aspect of the film industry, and we pretty much have a ban on it in university or any film school. So, but at some point, I know a lot of people on this call are interested in directing or kind of going into production. At some point, we are going to encounter our first kind of stunt scene. And do you have any advice for either new directors or kind of smaller productions for people to kind of take that safely? And what resources should we look out for?
Well, it depends, again, if it's union or non-union. Generally, with all the union stuff, it is required that you have a stunt coordinator on set, and obviously give a risk assessment so that everything, you know, is above board. But in general, safety. Like, a lot of kind of my job too is kind of just common sense. You know, hopefully when you read over a scene, if you can just you yourself identify kind of all the danger elements. Something like, oh, okay, two kids are swimming in the water. I mean, okay, water right there. On a full budget film, you'd have divers standing by, perhaps like, you know, medics. You should generally have medics on set when you have any stunts going on. And maybe creative ways of filming action that minimize the amount of danger involved. So from a director's point of view, if you're having two kids splash in the water, or two actors, it's maybe a love scene in the water or something. Let's have the scene, no deeper than 4 feet of water. And, you know, maybe they're just crouching down, and then, you know, you can fake the camera angles to look at like they're swimming or whatever. So you can get creative with camera angles to obviously minimize the danger.
Great.
Hello. What's the comparison between stunt choreography and dance choreography? If you can elaborate any of that.
Well, stunt choreography generally involves an element of danger or falling. So anytime there is a fall where you don't land on your feet, that would be considered a stunt. Generally in dance, and even acrobatics to a degree, or circus performing, people never like fall. The movements are highly acrobatic, highly dangerous, but at the end of the day, they're controlled by the dancer. They jump into a jeté or a pirouette in the air. They're landing on their feet, and assuming they've practiced that skill thousands of times to know how to perform it safely, and the choreography a bunch, so they know what's happening. But with the stunt industry, you know, the falls, you know, landing at different angles, sometimes you want to land one of the most dangerous falls, known as like a taco, where you kind of land on your back, so it looks like your head and your toes come around and tap the ground, and it looks like, oh, the person landed on their neck. There's always going to be kind of an element of danger in that too. So really it's where things land in parts that aren't safe beyond normal movement.
When designing a fight scene, what techniques in your field are most effective for telling a story so that it's not just action?
Well, I guess at the base of it, we would look at the characters. If it's just two kind of street fighters fighting with no training, obviously you'd have to design that action to be a little more basic, a little more raw, a little more gritty, generally kind of more tackles and lunges and thrusts at the person. If you're talking about two seasoned martial art masters here, then everything's got a lot, be a lot more intricate. There'll be a lot more choreography. And again, we have to think about how much time do we have to shoot this too? Or do we have the luxury of shooting from a couple angles to tell the story? So a lot of it is limited by those factors. At the end of the day, we'll look at the characters, we'll see what we can do, and hopefully we can deliver a product that is able to realistically be shot.
Curious about when you're dealing with child actors and that when stunts need to be done for them, how you kind of deal with that and whether you can like, whether there's any difficulty finding young people to do stunts for them so that they kind of match up in terms of looks.
One of the most difficult jobs for Coiner is finding doubles of actors of weird sizes. There's a really skinny, lanky actor on Star Trek Discovery. So kind of finding a double for him was difficult. Luckily, like there was a veteran performer who actually kind of fit that body type and in makeup, you know, pretty much was a good double for him. But like the other call I got once, do you have, you know, African woman of this, she was a bigger woman, maybe 5'2 or something like that. That was a difficult job. So he's calling everyone he knows. Sometimes we'll just, there's a stunt community group that we have on Facebook. Sometimes we'll just put it out there. Hey, anyone know of an actor this size? Anyone have a kid, 90 pounds, 4'8", Caucasian that looks like this kid? They'll even post the kid sometimes or post a photo of the actor and say, anyone match this person? And sometimes you'll get bites and hopefully for the most part you will. But yeah, it is a challenge to find a double for actors sometimes.
That's a good question.
Hey, Alan, I was just wondering to what degree a location will shape the actual stunt and if you as a coordinator have any say in how a location looks, right? Because in the script it says, oh, this is taking place in an office. There's a lot of ways an office could look. So do you have any say in creating that location and finding that location?
So most of the time, if it, let's say it is an office and there's a fight scene that happens in an office and they're using a real location, meaning the property is not productions and shouldn't be destroyed, then obviously you would work around that. You'd have an idea of the cubicles. So we'd maybe take some of the action down this cubicle. We might talk to SFX and say, okay, let's have them break through this wall. So they'll be responsible on the day for making a fake wall that will break through on the day. But for example, I was just thinking of in The Matrix, there was an office scene. That was the studio. So when everything's in studio, that's kind of the ideal scenario. Everything's controlled, you know, everything has been manufactured. They'll have 3, 5, 10 extra tables we can smash through. And we have the time to kind of position everything, lighting, sound equipment, cameras, exactly how we want it.
I'll go last, yes. I was wondering, well, I kind of know it, but what is the main difference between traditional martial arts and stunt fighting? Is there any when you're transitioning from something like competitions for martial arts to a stunt performance, what are the main differences between the two?
So Jackie Chan's kind of motto in Chinese is wu, and that means martial art dance. Everything on camera is choreographed, right? It is like a martial art dance. It's choreography. And it's how well the performers can bring that choreography to life that sells how exciting a fight will look. A real fight, obviously, is not choreographed. It's moment-to-moment reaction off the other person. And it could be a life or death decision, depending on how you move. And a lot of times, professional fighters do not make good performers. And that's really the nitty gritty of it. It's called a stunt performer. So when you throw a punch, and let's say it's a punch and someone's got a block, I know he's gonna block here. So I will always, no matter what I do, stop my punch here. I'm never really throwing a punch. He's never, you know, really forcefully blocking it. But I am gonna have my body articulate that, oh, oh my God, he stopped my fist right there. Like, it's all in that performance, your body language. And the better a performer is, the more they know how to sell these to make it look like, oh, this is a super fast kick. I have the intention of killing this person, but it is all controlled and choreographed and safe at the end of the day.
Thank you so much. So before you go, I did ask you to prepare 5 film recommendations, and I'm very curious as to what those might be.
So at first I was like, oh, I'll just list my favorite movies, but I'm here as a stunt coordinator in that capacity. So I made a list. I wrote down 10. So these first 5, in my opinion, one, they inspired me, and they are like, they've been excellent movies worldwide, because they're not just kung fu or just action movies. They actually find the balance between story and action. And for me, like, you know, that is the ideal. Like, there's a lot of kung fu movies that are, it's a thin story, to say the least. And, you know, it's just they're just talking just to get from action scene to action scene. So for me, it starts with Rocky, Sylvester Stallone. My car was in the shop the other day and just happened to be like playing in the waiting room. And just, I was just even the acting scenes, I was like fully engrossed. I mean, in this character and his story. And then obviously the boxing sequences at the end, training, the iconic training montages of that film will kind of stand the test of time. So Rocky. Dragon, the Bruce Lee story, was like, I think that came out in 92. That was kind of my first real look at Bruce Lee and his life. There have been a lot of kind of like movie elements and stuff that maybe aren't 100% true, but it did a great job of kind of conveying like the legend and the kind of the icon, the iconic martial arts that he did develop at the time. And that was one of the movies that kind of got me into the world of martial arts and wanting to pursue that for the rest of my life. Rumble in the Bronx, I think, was my first Jackie Chan movie that I saw. Like, I remember my dad raving about Jackie Chan when I was a kid, but, you know, he was big only in Hong Kong and China. I wasn't big into, like, Chinese movies. I'm like, ah, whatever, I don't get it. But then the theatrical release of Rumble in the Bronx, I was like, holy smokes, this guy's, I've never seen any, like, I wanted to run and jump off buildings. Like, you know, I came out of the movie, I was ready to go, I was ready to do stuff. So that really got me on the edge of my seat. Next is, of course, The Matrix. Amazing story. I mean, it had levels of philosophy, layered, of course, with action, iconic action, action that pioneered a lot of sequences to come after it. And so, Matrix was fantastic and actually lent a lot of its action to Asian style action, which, you know, now has become the standard. And of course, another Jackie Chan movie, Rush Hour. Great, great story, hilarious. I guess today, probably a little bit dated in terms of, you know, how races are represented, you know, Kung Fu Master Asian guy. Quick talking, loud talking black guy. But at the time, and I still find it hilarious, and their relationship, the dynamic was fantastic. And then the action, of course, was great too. Going on to kind of more, so my background obviously is in martial arts, not so much kind of the other sides of stunts, but for me, I really liked the other 5, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. You know, they've been doing wire work and stuff like that in Asia for years and years and years. But that release and the way they filmed it and of course the story as a whole was just absolutely stunning, absolutely beautiful. It really put the art in martial arts, you know? So great, great movie. Flashpoint. This was Donnie Yen's, a Chinese movie released in Hong Kong. This was when MMA was kind of just becoming popular, right? And so MMA, for the most part, I mean, if you know martial arts, it's 2 guys humping on the floor. I mean, it's a lot of groundwork, a lot of grappling, right? And, you know, just from rolling, that's what it's called, it's exhausting. You're putting 100% of your energy, like, just sometimes you got to conserve your energy. Sometimes you're clenched like that just because you're trying to catch your breath. It's exhausting. Not very exciting to watch. So Flashpoint was actually the first time they kind of took Hong Kong style action and added the MMA style stuff into it, which I didn't even think was possible, and it was just so creative how they went about that. And so they had a few more acrobatic sequences maybe before a lock, and then even the locks themselves were like devastating. They would pick them up and smash them through bricks. I'm like, oh, the end, like if you even just don't watch a whole movie, just type in the end sequence, flashpoint, final fight. It's, I think it's like this 10 minute long fight, and I heard it took them like months to shoot even, but it was just so epic. Moving on from there, you have the Raid Redemption, and that was just it really brought kind of impact into the martial arts world. Prior to that, you know, obviously you have, you know, you would just see, you know, fist across the face reaction, and you know, it sold. But kind of in Raid, and actually I should also mention Ong Bak, that's really the first one that kind of started it. You see the impact, like not only impact, but like foot to head. Boom, you can't help but like, as an audience, even as a veteran stunt performer, you're like, holy crap, how did they do that? Yeah, that was really revolutionary. And then moving on just into the superhero genre, like you can't top the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I mean, I know a bunch of the people that have worked on those movies, just in terms of the fusion of wire work, action, creativity, and of course the VFX, just fusing them all together to tell this story. Like the action sequences, I mean, you can't turn away. It's the action equivalent of a Lay's chip. You know, you can't eat just one. You can't turn away from this action sequence. Like this, it just continues on telling the story, and the action's incredible from beginning to end. Finally, I'm going to end with not so much a stunt-heavy movie, but this is more of a movie. It's actually based off a novel and a series of books called The Peaceful Warrior. And it wasn't that widely received, I guess. It didn't like win any Oscars or anything, but the book itself embodies a lot of kind of Asian philosophies that you know, obviously in my trainings I've come across. And it's essentially about a gymnast who was kind of cocky, and he got into a motorcycle accident, broke his leg, and then kind of met this Yoda-like master who kind of helped him learn a lot about life, about recovery, about his body, and eventually he recovered and went on to compete. And it kind of merges, you know, a little bit of realism with the mystical. And it's really a movie worth watching.
Thank you so much. Yeah, those are some great recommendations. I remember watching Ong Bak. I saw it this year, and yeah, I was the same way. I was like, oh, how did they do that? Like, it's brutal to watch, but you can't look away. And yeah, and the MCU just does a phenomenal job with the stunts of bringing each character, like it's so well designed, where each character has such a unique fighting style, and yeah, and there's so many on the list that are just phenomenal films, so yeah. I'm excited to see the ones that I haven't seen already. Mm-hmm. But yeah, thank you so much for taking the time out of your day to talk with us and talking about your journey and the different, you know, elements of the stunt department, because again, it's something that isn't really covered in film school.
Again, to your audience members and anyone on this podcast currently, you can also follow me on TikTok and Instagram. And for me personally, like, I guess I take a page personally out of kind of Jackie Chan's book. You know, I love action. I love like crazy stuff, but I'm also a bit of a joker. And a lot of the new videos that I put up, the Training Madness videos, I kind of, you'll find that a lot. You know, I don't mind making a fool of myself if it'll make you guys laugh. So yeah, follow me, guys. If you have any questions, let me know, shoot me a message, and I'm around. Thanks so much.
Thank you to those of you who ask questions, and be sure to subscribe and follow us on Instagram or join our Facebook group for information about upcoming guests. New episodes come out every Saturday.